if while we were enemies, we were reconciled to God through the death of his Son, much more surely, having been reconciled, will we be saved by his life. Sitting in the lounge overlooking the old city of Jerusalem after Shabbat dinner, the story of the Exodus entered our minds as we began to take in the news of Hosni Mubarak's resignation a few hours before. The streets of Cairo were filled with jubilation. Israel was beset by anxiety. Was the same God who had been on the side of Hebrew slaves now on the side of those Egyptians, presently chanting their thanksgivings to Allah for deliverance from yet another Pharaoh? David Strauss, senior rabbi of the Mainline Reformed Temple in Bryn Mawr, who became our rabbi on the trip, responded, as rabbis are wont to do, with a midrash. It went something like this. After the children of Israel had passed through the sea on dry land, and as the waters rushed back over the Egyptian army, leaving not one Egyptian alive, the children of Israel danced and sang and gave thanks to God for their deliverance. God, however, was silent. So the puzzled Israelites stopped their festivities long enough to ask the master of the universe, "Why? Why are you not rejoicing with us? For you have saved us, your chosen people, from our enemy." God replied, "How can I rejoice when my children are drowning in the sea?" The 124th Psalm, notwithstanding, does the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob take sides on this side of the divide between time and eternity? Or to put a theological point on a somewhat political question, what has God's election, God's choice to be Israel's God, God's choice in Jesus Christ to be our God, what has election to do with the claim that God is for us in the ambiguities of human history? In a week when religious extremism once again has hidden from our eyes what God is doing to make and keep human life human, these inquiries can no longer be matters for idle speculation of a Sunday morning. At first glance, the 124th Psalm would seem to beg the question of God's partisanship in history, given the congregation's unquestioning confirmation of and confidence in God's action on their behalf. If it had not been the Lord who was on our side when our enemies attacked us, then they would have swallowed us up alive when their anger was kindled against us. In the history of Israel, one thinks of the Egyptians, the Canaanites, the Philistines, to name a few foes against whom Israel prevailed, presumably because God had been on Israel's side. But in fact, these may not have been the battle lines the psalmist had in mind. The word in the second verse that the New Revised Standard Version takes to mean enemies is a word that, once read in translation in less inclusive times, men, or even more literally, man. The word in Hebrew is Adam. If it had not been no doubt, this is a danger posed to each and every one of us at every moment of our lives. I think of the revolutionaries in Egypt who chose not to put their trust in violence, even when they were met with violence. Perhaps in their own way, they are now praying to Allah, particularly as they fend off religious fundamentalism in favor of democracy. If it had not been the Lord who had been on our side, the God who was with them because they chose to trust God rather than guns or even religious extremism. Yet I think this can make our trust in God into a strategy, our victories into the triumph of our moral righteousness, thereby turning the psalmist's point inside out. The congregation is not awash in thanksgiving because they had chosen to be on God's side. They are astonished and amazed that God had been on their side. But on their side, in what sort of contest? Given the next few verses, it seems to me the psalmist has an even more decisive struggle in mind than Israel's struggle with the aggregate of her enemies, or as Mays puts it, with the nations in their humanness. More than defeat on the battlefield, if it had not been the Lord who was on our side, says Israel, then the flood would have swept us away, the torrent would have gone over us. Then over us would have gone the raging waters. The mind flips to the story in Exodus, but these are images that suggest also a battle of cosmic proportions. They are perhaps an echo of the tradition of the combat against the powers of chaos and a primeval flood, says Arthur Weiser. Here, the battle is God's, who created the heavens and the earth. What does that mean? Because in creating, God did not will all things. The chaos that God did not will still threatens that which God has willed. Think the tsunami. Think the earthquake before that. But also think that in human being that tends toward chaos. Therefore, our struggle is not against enemies of blood and flesh, wrote someone to Christians in Ephesus, but against the rulers, the authorities, the cosmic powers of this present darkness, against the spiritual forces of evil in the heavenly places. Second question, then where does this battle take place, and against whom do we fight? As you know, we are prone to locate the cosmic powers of any present darkness. Where? In the other. The other who is our enemy. makes it very hard to name the subject in a sentence such as, "If it had not been the Lord who was on our side." Who takes center stage? If we go along with our normal way of analyzing human history, we who are God's elect are center stage, and God's defeat of our enemies is confirmation of that one true thing. Yet if we continue to follow this sentence to the end, not letting the word enemies keep us from the psalmist's meaning, we hear, I think, a radically different word. If it had not been the Lord who was on our side, when Adam, our humanness, when our self-centeredness, when our collective and individual sinfulness attacked us, would have swallowed us up. When the flood of that in us which does not will God's will threatened to sweep us away, the torrent of our opposition to God overwhelmed us. Plainly put, when in our so-called freedom we place ourselves at the center of human history as the one righteous nation or tribe, or religion, or even as the one righteous individual, God, whose enemy we become in the contest, takes our side. But takes our side by way of God's judgment that sets a limit to our defiance. And takes our side by way of God's mercy and love, which alone is able to touch the source of the rebellion in the human heart. This aspect of God's sovereignty, God's power, God's rule, again, according to Niebuhr, is always partly hidden. And that's the rub. Always partly hidden. And the meaning of life and history is partly obscure, not only because human defiance and moral evil seem to enjoy long periods of immunity. Read the 73rd Psalm about the unending prosperity of the wicked. You know, you look at what happens in the world and you say, where is God's justice and power? We simply do not see it. But God also seems hidden because the relationship of divine mercy to divine justice is obscure. This is how Israel could say, looking back at the exile, even though this cannot be said looking back at the Shoah, Israel could say that in their defeat and exile, God was for them. God purposed good for them. If it had not been the Lord who was on the side of God's chosen people then, putting a stop to idolatrous kings and false prophets, then the enemy that they had become to God would have overtaken them. And so we come to you and me. Likewise, in the shadow of the cross, Paul could say that God proved his love for us in that while we were still weak, while we were yet sinners, while we were enemies of God, while we were heirs of Adam, who has from the beginning chosen to know good and not God, God assumed our side. Assumed the blood and flesh of the old Adam in order to pitch a cosmic battle against our captivity to the power of death. The climax of the biblical revelation of the divine sovereignty over history, says Niebuhr, is in the self-disclosure of divine love, which on the one hand is able to overcome the evil inclinations to self-destruction. self-worship in the human heart, and on the other hand, takes the evil of history into and upon himself. My friends, if it had not been the Lord who was on our side, if God in Christ had not come to us, if the God who spared not his own Son but delivered him up and handed him over to death for us all, if this God were not for us, how? In God's judgment that sets a limit to our rebellion, and in God's mercy, forgiving mercy that can redeem even our most noble revolution,